Jewish scholars have said the early history of our faith has many similarities to Judaism. Jewish scholars tell us the Torah is filled with black fire and white fire. The letters which make up the text and the spaces between the letters with their various understandings. This white space is Midrash. You've heard some of this Midrash in Robert Fulghum's Thanksgiving story. But the story of the first Thanksgiving, as most Americans have been taught, it is Midrash and not exactly accurate. Our textbooks with details are often abridged, softened, or out of context, and ultimately false. Children's literature simplify the story to a Disney version, with many animated television specials like The Mouse on the Mayflower. These legends not only misinformed a generation, but gave us a slew of cringeworthy stereotypes. I served two congregations on the South Shore of Massachusetts between Quincy and Plymouth. These congregations were alive with stories of Thanksgiving. Near Plymouth, Thanksgiving is a big deal. Their stories are different than the many myths we have of the period and the event. Like my reading by Fulghum, a revisionist history will give a different idea about the pilgrims and their first harvest celebration. Now, a Howard Zinn look at the period would tell us that even the pilgrims came by their lands by cheating the native from theirs. He would recall that John Winthrop, the first governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony, justified their actions because the natives had not subdued the land, and the Indians may have had the natural right, but not the civil right to the land. He would tell us that the pilgrims would use the passages from Psalms 2:8, which states, "Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the utmost parts of the earth for thy possession." They would justify any actions, citing Romans, which said, "Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they shall resist, shall receive themselves damnation." But it isn't Zim's revisionist history that I'm interested in. The newsman H.L. Mencken tells us that Puritanism is the knowledge that somewhere, someone is having a good time. Another humorist would tell us that though the pilgrims fell over the rock, it would be better for America if the rock fell on the Puritans. Both statements have some truth of the Puritan and pilgrim legacy of us. You can probably trace our work ethic and much of our work ethic guilt to the pilgrim thought. But that's not the revisionist history I wish to tell you this morning. My history of the pilgrims can be summed up with the phrase, "They were only here for the beer." This is true. The two ships, the Mayflower and the Speedwell, departed Plymouth, England in September 16, 1620, and had to return when the Speedwell was taking on too much water and transferred 20 additional people to the Mayflower. They then repacked the Mayflower and took in some additional rations and proceeded 10 days later with 110 souls on board. Now, what I appreciate about the pilgrims was they wouldn't drink anything but beer. In the Puritan time of Europe, the water could be easily contained, full of diseases, but beer or anything that contained alcohol was always pure because alcohol would kill the microbes that were in the barrel. Water, on the other hand, was less pure as the journey progressed. 2 months after the second departure, the Mayflower arrived in the New World, having lost only one person overboard. With only having beer to depend upon, I can imagine how slippery the decks could be. Now, when the ship arrived in the area of what is now Provincetown, the ship's captain knew there wasn't anything close to the Virginia colony, which was about 1,200 miles south. But the ship was quickly running out of liquid, and the crew was getting desperate. So they pulled into the protective areas of the Cape to get some provisions. Now, the Virginia chapter for charter for Jamestown listed most of the East Coast, and they were actually headed towards the Hudson Valley in New York, which was considered northern Virginia, one source disclosed. But they were forced off course by a storm, and in Provincetown, they found no liquid, but found some water supplies that were almost palatable and decided to winter there before heading south. If you can remember one thing about this, remember the Pilgrims stopped at Plymouth because they ran out of beer. The Pilgrims' ancestors of both the congregations I served in Massachusetts were different from the Puritans, which founded the Massachusetts Bay Colony 10 years later. All Puritans believed in eliminating what they saw as surviving Catholic or Lutheran influences in the Anglican Church. This was the cause of the English Civil War 20 years later, and between the Roundheads who supported Parliament and the Cavaliers who supported the royalty. The Pilgrims differed from the other Puritans because they believed in separating from the Church of England rather than reforming it. These separatists put more emphasis on the study of Hebrew and called many of their early meeting houses temples and built them with the Orthodox architecture in mind. Like Judaism, their houses of worship had upper balconies, which allowed the separation of the sexes. For those of you who have seen Old Ship Meeting House, built in 1682 in Hingham, Massachusetts, which is the oldest continuous church in this country and a member of the Unitarian Universalist congregations, you will notice an upper balcony area which compares favorably to Jewish synagogues of the era. The Unitarian Meeting House in Ipswich, England, which was built in 1699, which I attended, was designed in the same way. Because the Pilgrim experience in tolerant Holland differed from the Puritan persecution in Anglican or Catholic England, their society separated spiritual life from secular life and accepted more diversity until the colony fell under the control of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1691. The Pilgrims strongly aligned with the Hebrew concept of covenant between themselves and their God. Thus, after the Mayflower arrived at the tip of Cape Cod in November 11th, their first official act before establishing the colony at Plymouth in December 22nd was to establish their covenant, which was called the Mayflower Compact. It was more protection for the non-church members of their community from the religion of the saints, which they were called. Pilgrims had a rather harsh passage due to adverse winds when they ran into starting so late in the season. Counting the one lost soul of 110 en route from England, by their harvest festival the next year, their numbers were down below 50, with only 4 women left. This was mostly due to disease, which was helped by inadequate diet, disease, and housing. The colonists wintered on the Mayflower after their first house burnt, and they were building other homes. Their ship was damp, crowded, unsanitary, which helped disease flourish. The expedition from England was as much economic as it was religious. Only half of the company that wintered in the colony were pilgrim. Within the Reformed Puritan tradition, from which Unitarianism and somewhat Universalism arose, church members were referred to as saints, and the non-church members, like Captain Miles Standish, were called strangers. Both strangers and saints were unprepared for so primitive a life. Food, which was plentiful, was thought of as unedible. Plymouth Bay was loaded with fish and shellfish, but the pilgrims thought things like lobster, which were so plentiful, a pest, because they would eat the bait off of their hooks. By the fall of 1621, the pilgrims' first harvest had been very successful and plentiful. There were corn, fruits, vegetables, along with fish packed in salt and smoke-cured meat. They had enough food for the coming winter. The pilgrims had beaten the odds. They were at peace with their Indian neighbors, and Governor William Bradford proclaimed a day of thanks. Strangers and saints shared a three-day event. The natives were not originally invited. Their first Thanksgiving was more than just recognizing a good harvest, but celebrating the whole pilgrimage of being in less than 50 of the escape that escaped sickness and lack of preparation. Technically, it was not a Thanksgiving. It was a harvest festival. A Thanksgiving would have been more religious celebration of one day and would contain no games or merriment. They rejoice in their abundance, as we today may rejoice in ours. These pilgrims who had previously been city dwellers in the university town of Leiden and were chosen for follow-on skills necessary in the Jamestown colony, like thatchers of roofs and chandlers and making candles. The strangers were soldiers and sailors who had expected to be part of the Virginia colony had survived. It would have been like taking any of us from our locations and putting us in the Arctic of Canada and telling us to survive with the skills that we make a living of here. Every family would have had a loss. There are about 150 of you today in this room. Think how devastating it would be to have lost half that number in a year. As we enjoy Harvest Fest Thanksgiving, we cannot know what that first Thanksgiving really felt like, except by maybe recalling the memory of a great personal or community loss. Every pilgrim worked within sight of Burial Hill and would know simultaneously the feeling of thanksgiving for being alive and the great loss that they had experienced. The pilgrims occupy a covenant place in the American mythology, and their winter of death and tribulation is what gives this day of thanks its true import and explains its special place in the American psyche. They live through unimaginable hardship and grief, yet their spirit is at one with going forward in great thanks for the opportunity to be among those who suffer rather than surrender to that suffering. At the first Thanksgiving, one member of the community that wasn't present was their minister, John Robinson. While they had a church that was more like a common fortress room, which was built 100 yards up the hill from the rock in the bay, they had no minister. They probably tells us something about the relationship of the minister to the colony. Robinson was more important to the colony as a lobbyist for money and support back in England. One thing this meant to the pilgrims was that they could not take part in their church sacraments, the most significant of which was communion that had to be done by the clergy. But the pilgrims were not as much a religious homogeneous people as a people who were trying to live effectively in a community. It took pilgrims, the Puritans coming to Massachusetts Bay Colony, to bring us those mandatory blue laws and the Sunday services and many of the strict lifestyle that we call Puritan. We remember our pilgrims were really here for the beer. May we follow their example in having some fun in our lives today. And remember, Thanksgiving is about community and being alive in an ever-evolving and never-ending world. Amen.